on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the July 7th edition of InvestTalk. And we're here to help you make better money decisions. That's what this one-hour forum is for. And, of course, your input is always invited and appreciated. So you kind of help me stay on track of what's interesting for you. So that's what we do. We talk about all sorts of everyday money issues that become part of our daily life that we all have to make. We focus on ways, proven ways, to protect your assets. That, and of course, that always comes first, protecting your assets. You want to grow them, but you also need to have some protection. Then how to maximize the return on your invested dollars, whether it's in your 401k at work or your IRA or just your individual account, how to maximize return. And as I wrote on my most recent market commentary, there are many, many ways to manage a portfolio of assets. And just as many methods of finding assets you want. There's so many of them. Matter of fact, there's so many, it's kind of confusing because there's so many. However, the first step in the process of investing is, first you got to consider before you even purchase, you have to figure out a couple things. First, you got to establish a goal. What are you after? Are you after just wealth accumulation and through speculation? Are you going to speculate to get as much wealth as possible and you don't care about the risk? Or is your goal just produce income because you're retired and you don't want to take a lot of risk, but you want that income? Or is it growth in income? Are you a balance of both? What are you trying to achieve? So you got to establish your goal. Then the discussion turns to risk. How much risk do you want to take? And how do you measure and manage that risk to achieve your goal? How much risk you want to take, and how do you measure and manage it to get to the goal that you're after? And after setting a goal and establishing both risk tolerance and risk management, you finally can begin the difficult task of developing a strategy. Most people can set a goal, but measuring risk and developing a strategy that meets your personal goals and risk tolerance, that's much more difficult. So you can establish a goal, but just trying to get there in a way that meets your personal risk tolerance, how much are you, for instance, if you can say, I want to be rich. Okay. How rich? I want to have $10 million by the time I retire. Okay. That's a great goal. Now, how do you get there? Right? I mean, it's obvious. Well, how do you get there? Well, I'm going to save this much money, put it in the stock market, and I'm going to buy very high speculative stocks and constantly put money in those things over the next 30 years. Well, then how much is that? Let's figure out what the return would be. You see, you can do it. And how much, and then we could figure out, well, this is how many downdrafts, how much you're going to have 50% plus downdrafts occasionally along the way because of the high risk that you're taking. So you can do all that. That's all measurable and doable. I don't know if it's measurable and doable for the average person, but it is for professionals such as us. You can do that. And to begin that process of trying to figure out how much risk you are willing to, because set your goal, but how much risk are you willing to take? How much risk can you take? Well, we have on investtalk.com, you've heard of us talk about our Riskalyze software. You can give it a try. It's free, and it will give you a score based on your own personal risk tolerance choices. There's a series of questions, and they're simple questions. And you can say, how much reward do I want for how much risk that I'm taking? And it gives you percentages, and you just answer a few questions. And it gives you a score from 1 to 99, 0 to 100. And if you have a score of 80, that happens to match the risk of the S&P 500. So that gives you a little hint for you right there. But once you get a score for you on your personal risk tolerance, then we can put in your portfolio We can match up a portfolio to that risk score so that the portfolio matches the risk, the downdrafts, the up moves with what you're comfortable with. It's kind of a neat tool. But the first thing is you got to go there and take the questions and answer them. And it comes automatically to my desk, the risk questions, and then we take it from, we take it there, then you know, we get your portfolio, put it in the system, and on the other side, we then produce a score for that, and then we develop a risk, a retirement map for you. I mean, there's all kinds of things to it, and it's all free. But first, let's talk about your money concerns. Our number is 888-99-CHART. We'll take the question now from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Mike from Washington. I really appreciate the show. You've been a lot of help. I do have a question about researching stocks for purchase or sale because I need to know where to look first and what's most important when analyzing stock securities. There are many things to look at, but I was wondering if you have priorities. Again, I appreciate your information and the insights you have. Thanks again.
That's a very good question, and the answer is yes. I have one always basic premise you've heard me over and over and over on the show is make sure you buy stocks that make money. Stocks that make money. Companies that are making money. So you want to see earnings growing. You want to see sales growth. And you want to see margins, profit margins, either stabilizing or increasing. Those are the basics. You want a return of equity of 17% or higher. You'd like the growth of the PE, the growth being higher than the PE ratio, and in a growth stock, you want it to be at least twice as high as the PE ratio. If you're buying, remember, there's different stocks that you're looking for different things. If you're looking for growth, you want a GPE of 2, growth to PE ratio of 2. But if you're looking for income, then you go to what's the dividend and how much of the earnings are they paying in dividend. That's called a payout ratio. If they're earning a dollar, you don't want to have a payout ratio more than 60%. So you don't want them to pay more than 60 cents in the form of a dividend. You don't want them to pay more than that. I'm limiting to you. Now, but then you got real estate investment trusts that are different. They have to pay 90% of their earnings in the form of a dividend. They're required to do that. Well, there's different things to look at. We don't want a company with a lot of debt, unless that debt is required to grow the company because it's a bank or a financial institution or something. See, so there's so many different things, depends on the kind of stocks. But back to the basics, you want a stock that's growing its earnings and growing its sales. Now, that seems pretty basic, but there's many companies that are not doing that are very high. I mean, there are companies that make no money and the people love them. I don't, but that's a basic thing, okay? Okay, your highly contrary portfolio may not provide enough cushion if the market turns south. The makings of a shaky portfolio. That's going to be our main talking point today, the makings of a shaky portfolio. There are some people, I've seen these portfolios, think that they're being very careful, they're watching their portfolio very closely, and they really don't understand how much risk that portfolio is taking. And that's what we're going to talk about. One of the things about a shaky portfolio. Also, some interesting statistics that came out so far this week, and so we're only into Tuesday. So I think I want to talk about them. They're really kind of interesting, the economic numbers. Maybe not everybody loves them, but I think they're important for you and for me to see. Three issues the market must deal with. There's three main issues the market is struggling with this year so far. And you probably can guess them, but we're going to talk about all three of them in a little bit more detail. And have you seen China's market? I know I talked about it last week, but I think we need to talk about it again. Did you realize that 20% of the listed stocks on the Chinese stock market have halted trading? 20%. That's 651 companies on the index. They've halted trading on them. To think of that was happening here in the United States. That would be such a huge thing. So I want to talk about the Chinese market if we can. Tomorrow we have Alcoa reporting earnings after hours tomorrow. And, you know, the only reason I bring it up is because we're now moving into earnings season again. And every time we move into earnings seasons, alcohol is the one that leads off the earnings season. So it's the thing that we look at. Not a lot of great things are being anticipated, by the way. Profits are probably going to be down, and the sales should be close to they were before the first quarter, but not a great deal. So we'll see what happens and comes out. Of course, you know, you saw the market today. Okay, the market was up 93 points on the Dow, 6 points on the NASDAQ, and 13 points on the S&P 500. It's odd, is that not? Usually the NASDAQ is much higher. Well, it was odder than that. The market was down well over 100 points this morning and was negative for much of the day and then came roaring back. Why? Well, this would be called a reversal day, by the way, in case you were wondering. And a intra-reversal day is instructive. It's instructive because you have a lot of people not having a lot of faith in the market, fall during the day, and then come roaring back for several hours at the end of the day, and ending near its high for the day, and ending up for the day. That's kind of a reversal day. And you can see it on a chart. You can see where the market opened, where it fell, and where it closed. And the reason why that's important, many, many times, in technically speaking, a reversal day says that we've shaken out all the weak hands of holding stocks. And then the strong, you know, the stock market came back, and the stronger hands are holding stocks now. But I don't know if you can count a reversal day of only 100 points down, 150 points down, then 100 points up. That's 250 point swing. But it didn't feel like it was that big of a reversal. And usually you have huge volume. And the volume was higher, I will say that, but wasn't that big, wasn't that high. So I mean, when we had the reversal day or two in October, we had almost a 10% correction, the volume was twice as much as it was today. So I don't know if we can count it as a real reversal day. We'll see. Obviously it's a lot of volatility today, but we'll see. Okay, be sure to take a look at our new Discipline Equity Program, our portfolio for KPP Financial. It targets focused growth for maximum returns. It's really going after high beta, high growth companies. It provides aggressive market exposure. And of course, it's a disciplined approach. We manage the risk by going through different sectors, not too much in one stock, but it is focused on pure growth and appreciation. So take a look at it if you think it's appropriate for you. Check in now with your questions about dividend-paying investments or any money matter at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I recently discovered your show and find it very informative. I'm calling from Portland, Oregon. I'm curious about Pure Funds ISE Cybersecurity ETF. I think it goes under HACK, H-A-C-K. It looks like it's fairly new, started in October, I believe, of last year, and I'm very interested in this. If you could give me your evaluation on it, what you think, I'd like to invest in it, but want your feedback on it. Thanks so much.
Okay, HACK, H-A-C-K. By the way, I have relatives in Portland, Oregon, several nieces and nephews that live there. Nice, nice town. It's an exchange-traded fund, ETF, seeking performance corresponding to the cybersecurity index. Okay, so first of all, you want to look what's inside the index and see what's there, but that's what it's tracking. So it's a high-risk area of the market. So you got to expect high volatility, meaning the thing's going to go up and down sharply. And it did come out, as you said, back in November last year, and that came out at about $25. Well, I'll pick it up right after the break. This is Invest Talk. We'll be right back.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. The feeling of nervousness can stem from the fact that your retirement portfolio is growing too slowly. So what do you do? Well, one thing not to do, chase performance. Fighting the urge to chase performance. That's our talking point for Wednesday's podcast. We hope you'll join us then.
888-99-CHART. Quickly, we're talking about HACK before, H-A-C-K, and it's an ETF seeking correspondence to the cybersecurity index. The thing to be aware of, it's going to be very volatile. It came out at $25, got up to $34, and now is down to $30 in the last 2 weeks. So, you know, it's volatile. But if you like that area of the market, this is a good place to be. But this should be your speculative part of your portfolio. It's very speculative. Even though it does diversify over a number of areas, but it's really focused on a specific area of the market, cybersecurity. And I like that area, by the way. Let's go to Franklin, San Carlos. How are you doing, Franklin?
I'm doing good, doing good. And I need to get some advice from you for a company called Juno, J-U-N-O, pharmaceutical company, cancer cure. One of the guys, a couple of them come out with, they've sort of found a cure for cancer. And I don't know how strong that is, but it sounds pretty strong. 91% of the patients, it's killing their cancer cells. And I read some stuff that sounded pretty good. And they're a fairly new stock out there. I think 6 months old. They had a drop because of insider. There was a period where insiders could have options or something. They sort of dropped. And then they had news, and then it popped. And it dropped down a little bit again. And there's a company called Cell Gene or something that bought it. And they bought it at a 90. They bought their shares or did some options with it, and it paid like $93 a share for something that they've got. So I don't know. I don't know what the price is. They have some targets worth $8.
Okay. Franklin, I understand. Okay. Celgene received that. Juno received a 10-year contract for $1 billion from Celgene to develop and commercialize some treatments. That's what happened. Juno Therapeutics is not making money, has never made money. It's going to lose $1.50 a share this year. It lost 95 cents a share last year, 65 cents a year before. It's going to lose $1.50 next year, too. So it's not making money, and it's probably not going to make money. It has a drug under phase, I don't see phase 2 or 3, I'm not sure. And it's been upgraded by Morgan Stanley as a stock to watch. So, you know, it has some positive things, but again, until it makes money, you're paying it's $52.37 for a stock that doesn't make any money. And I don't like buying stocks that don't make money. When it actually comes out with this therapy and is actually selling, this company has no sales, zero. Now it's going to get paid by Celgene $1 billion for a 10-year development of a therapy, but it hasn't made any money yet other than they're being paid by Celgene to develop something. So it's a speculative company. It's like going to Vegas and you're hoping it's going to be a big winner. And it could be. I'm not saying it's not, Franklin, but this is a stock you would invest with the money. You are perfectly willing to lose all of it, because a company doesn't make any money and it could obviously go out of business, be bought by somebody, or have a great winning drug. I don't know.
But Steve, do you think that because of this company investing $1 billion, and they're a very big company, I read into them a little bit, they're pretty good on what they do.
Celgene?
Do you think that's telling you something?
That's telling me that Celgene has some faith in their ability to come up with something. But again, they don't have that thing that it's a story stock. It's got a great story. You know, but those are very speculative stocks. So just be aware, if you're going to invest in it, to be perfectly willing to lose all your money, because that's a possibility. Or you'll make a huge winner. So you're rolling the dice. It's both ends. Thanks, Franklin. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Saeed in Oakland. How you doing, Saeed? Sit. Saeed, are you there? Saeed. Yellow. Saeed. Okay, Saeed.
I'm here.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can
okay.
You hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I just called about the stock. Today was like over $41. What do you take on about this stock? Do you think is the chance going to go higher, or is it a buy or hold right now?
Well, Fitbit is a, you know, is a, it, it makes wearable health and fitness trackers on your wrists and mobile apps, and kind of is much more popular than the Apple Watch at this point, who, you know, should be their natural competitor, I would think. But Fitbit is an $8.6 billion company. Sales are growing over 200% a quarter. So it's really doing quite well. It's at, they made 70, they're going to make, they made 64 cents last year. They're going to make 70 cents this year and 91 cents a share next year. So it's really on a run, but it's a brand new company. Brand new means the IPO came out at $20 on June 18th, and today it's at $42. So it's already doubled. Now, so the question is how much is 91 cents worth a company growing 100 to 200%? How much is that company worth making that kind of money? So everybody right now thinks it's worth, you know, a 48 PE is what they think. So is that reasonable? I would say, yeah, that's fairly reasonable with this kind of growth prospect. So, you know, it's a very speculative stock, but it's at least much better than the one that I just talked about because it has earnings and it's growing very fast its sales. Thanks for calling, Saeed. I appreciate it. Coming up on Invest Talk Personal, if you need money for home improvement, our daughter's wedding, what's the best way to do that? 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you?
Good.
Thanks
for
taking my call.
Thank you.
Okay. I just wanted to get your opinion on Hershey HSY.
Well, I sure.
I just got some at about 88, and I just wanted to get your take on it.
Well, I certainly like their chocolate. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Hershey's from Hershey, Pennsylvania. If you've never been there, it's kind of an interesting place. Manufactured candy bars, bags and boxed candies, nuts, gums, baking ingredients, chocolate, drink mix, that kind of stuff. They make money. Yeah. They make money every year. They grow their earnings every year. They grow, you know, into single digits. It's a $20 billion company. Single digit means they're growing 3 to 6% earnings every quarter, and 5 to 9% sales. So it grows consistently. That's the nice thing about Hershey's. So if you want to buy Hershey's, you like to buy it at a discount. You really want to buy it when it's low. Because long term, it's going to keep doing what it's doing because that's what it's been doing for 10, 20 years. Okay, so it peaked at $110 right at the end of the year. And has now fell all the way down to about $88, $89. Perked up today. Had a nice day. And went up $2.31 today to $91.29. So it looks like this is a very strong support area, Art. So, and it pays a 2.3% dividend. If you're a long-term investor, this would be a good place to buy it, I think.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought because I just got in a... I think it was last week at 88, so, wanted to get your take on it.
And, of course, it could go lower, Art. I could be wrong. I'm just telling you that the probabilities is just this is a good place to where you should buy it, right in this area. I mean, back in 2012, it was low as $50 a share, but it's hard for me to believe that making $4.57 that they're going to go back down to $50 a share. That's a 10 PE, and I just can't see that happening. Yeah, I mean, it's possible.
Okay.
That would happen, Art, if we go into another big recession. Then it would happen. That's what I would think. Okay?
All right.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks,
appreciate it. Thank you. So let's talk about a portfolio. Let's talk about analyzing a portfolio. There's an article on the Smart Investor we have posted on our website about a portfolio analysis on a $1.23 million portfolio built on shaky grounds. Okay? Well, this is a person, and you know, this is a real portfolio that they say is real, that is very concentrated. It has like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different positions for $1.23 million. Very concentrated in any ones. He has a hedge fund. He has a couple of mutual funds. He has one stock. And he feels, the person who has this portfolio, he feels that he's watching this very closely and this is a good portfolio. Well, again, we have to go back. Well, what's your risk tolerance? Because this is a very high-risk portfolio. But you go and read the article, you find out he's retired. And this is money that he can't afford to lose. Well, then you ask the question, are you in this to grow this money or in this to for the income it can produce in retirement? What's your goal? Because the portfolio is kind of scattered. We don't know. It's not designed for growth. There's a part of it is a hedge fund. 300,000 of it is in a hedge fund. That's extremely risky and for high growth. And then, you know, he has master limited partnerships. That's kind of a growth thing. He has a big chunk in Japanese stocks, big chunk in European stocks. That's more speculative. So you see, so the portfolio, we can't tell if this is a proper portfolio other than it's a very high-risk portfolio, a very concentrated portfolio. Therefore, it's going to be very volatile at times. And if the market falls, this thing is going to get crushed. Now, some people, I got a couple of emails today about people telling me how well they've done in the last 5 years. And I think that's great. That's very great. But I don't want people to lose track that's the last 5 years, the market has done very well. So don't lose track of the risk that you're taking. And that's why you need to kind of understand what your personal risk tolerance is. Because when everything's going up, everybody's pretty happy. When it's going down, well, I mean, so far this year, the S&P 500 is down like 1%, 2%, somewhere in that range. So it hasn't done anything this year. I just want to make sure people understand the market doesn't always go up. Now, I don't expect the market to crash this year. I've been saying that I don't. I do think we're going to have a correction this summer. So far, the correction we've had has been pretty mild. I mean, what, it's gone from, let's say, 2,124 on the S&P in about 2 weeks. The furthest it's fallen and closed is about 255. So, you know, that's only like 1%. So it really hasn't done that much, you know. As far as a correction, that's not really nothing, really. This couldn't even describe that as a correction. The market's been in this tight trading range all year. And so what kind of risk tolerance do you have? This portfolio is very high risk. Anyways, you should read the article. It's kind of interesting on how they evaluate the portfolio. Don't save your questions. If you have a question about the basics, well, I'm here to help you. I want to help you. Whether you're an experienced investor or not, you can be a beginner. That's okay. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. Just a question. The Greek crisis has, of course, opened up a lot of questions. And all kinds of people could go on forever. But I guess the practical question I have is when the Greek government, I see on TV, the internet, whatever, people cannot access their accounts, their bank accounts. As a practical matter, I'm just curious what kind of other accounts the Greek people are frozen, basically. I mean, I see that people can't take things out of ATM machines. I guess they're worried about bank runs. So I suppose checks are not being processed as well. Maybe that's a question. Next question is, I'm just curious if they had 401ks or IRAs or whatever their equivalents are over there, their own personal savings that are not in a bank, although, I don't know, maybe everything is in a bank because everything's here anyway, federally insured. So I'm just curious if their investment accounts are also locked. I mean, could they go in and in the United States equivalent, go take money from a 401k? Could they sell a bond? Could they do something like that and take the cash? I'm also curious obviously, what your thoughts are about physical, you know, holding some physical gold or currencies. I don't have anything like that. I'm not talking from and I'm not trying to become paranoid, but I'm just, obviously, the government can't hold those things away from them. But anyways, I'm just curious most about their first stuff. What sort of lockdown do they have? And I appreciate your show a lot. Take care.
Okay, that's a good question. And I printed an article this morning to delve just what is going on. If you're an average guy in Greece and you wanted to take your money out of your bank, you can't. If you wanted to cash your paycheck, you can't because the bank's closed. Why is that happening? Well, the federal government in Greece have shut all the banks down because they don't have the euros. They're out of euros. They don't have the money. It's not in the bank. Money has been flooding out of the bank for months now, and those people who have taken it out, moved it off to some other country, are probably going to end up being the smart ones. So if you can't, before today, they were letting people take 60 bucks out, 60 euros out at a time, before this week, I think. But now, with that, when they voted the austerity program out, and they don't want any part of it, well, the banks don't have, where did the money come from for the banks? Remember, Greece is bankrupt. They don't have any money. So all the money they have is borrowed. And now when that is gone by paying pensioners and people spending it, and the banks have to shut their doors because they don't have the money. It's not there. Well, what does that do? Well, of course, think how disruptive that would be. What can they do? Well, the IMF or the ECB says, you don't have access now to borrowing the money like you were in the emergency liquidity assistance program that was keeping money in the banks. We're not going to give you any more money for that because you owe billions of dollars and you decide you don't want to, honor your agreements. So they don't have the physical money. And so the banks are closed. Now, you talk about 401ks or their equivalents. Well, I don't think they have that. They have pension plans. Everybody's on a pension plan of some kind if you're retired. And, of course, they don't have any money either. So no one knows where this story is going to end up, by the way. We really don't. On July 20th, they have another 3.5 billion euros due. That's about $3.9 billion. That money is due. They've already defaulted on one loan. They're going to probably default on this. This is a crisis that's building and building and building. What can happen? Well, what can happen is the Greek can confiscate the money in the banks, the Greeks' money, all the private citizens' money, and then print drachmas and no longer use a euro, and give them 20%, 80% on the dollar, 80% on the euro, 50% on the euro, take a big, huge haircut. And don't think that that can't happen, because it already has happened in Cyprus. They did exactly that, a 20% haircut, printed their own money. Because there's no way for Greece to do this. Now, of course, what will the money be worth, the drachma be worth in the world? Very little. Inside Greece, it might solve a problem temporarily, but there are going to be huge repercussions. So they don't have access to any of those funds freely like they have here, like we have here. Think about our government closing all the banks and then giving you 20 cents on the dollar, printing a new kind of currency. I mean, it's hard for us to even imagine how this works, how this could happen. When you don't have the money and you've been borrowing somebody else's money, they can always say, give me my money back and I'm not going to lend you any more, can't they? When you spend more than you earn, it's just that simple. As an individual person, you spend more than you earn, you eventually can't spend any more money because people stop lending money. Credit card companies won't let you charge anything. Eventually that will happen. It happens to individuals, it happens to countries, it happens to states, municipalities. And that's what happened to Greece. We're walking that same path, by the way. We're spending a lot more money, our government is, than it has. And it can't last. It cannot last forever. Some point, you got to pay back some of the money. You got to start paying off debt at some point. Time now for Invest Our Personal Home Equity Loans. Here are some basics about home equity loans. First of all, You have to qualify. That means you have to have a good credit score. So if you don't have a good credit score, you're probably going to have a hard time getting a home equity loan. Also, you have to have at least 30% equity in a home to get a home equity loan. I'm not big on home equity loans, by the way. Why are you increasing your debt? I don't like that. Eventually, you want to pay off your home loan when you get to retirement. But you do have to have equity in it if you're going to do a home equity loan. Now, the whole business of getting a home equity loan, do you really need the money? Or do you just want it to buy something fun? This is where I come in and say, most people don't need it. They just want it. So don't do it. That's my take. That's InvestTalk Personal. Do you have questions about home equity loans or maybe reverse mortgages? Get in touch. Bring your question. We're here, right here, right now for everybody. Our number is 888-99-CHART. Or you can write me a note by clicking on Contact Steve and send it to me on InvestTalk.com. By the way, I do have relatives who have a home equity loan so they can put it in a swimming pool. Did they need it? I don't know. I don't think so, but they didn't ask me. Yeah, and I have another one to put in solar heating or solar generating electricity. That might be a good reason to get a home equity loan because you get money back from that. But for a pool, yeah, I'm not buying that. So what do you need it? That's really the first question. If you don't need it, why are you doing it? And you know how I am about debt. I don't like debt. I don't think you should incur debt. Don't use your credit card. Let me rephrase that. Use your credit card, but pay them off every month. Be disciplined about it. And, you know, eventually have your mortgage paid off by the time you retire. That's kind of my rule in life. You know, if you can't, then you sell the house and move to something cheaper that you can afford, that you can pay off in retirement. Now, of course, there are exceptions. Maybe you have a bunch of properties and rental properties, and you're using the money, cheap money out of your home to buy another piece of property. I mean, there are going to be reasons not to pay off the mortgage. But as you approach retirement, generally, you do pay off the mortgage. Generally, you don't need a home equity loan. Because why should why do you need a loan? Save up the money and then buy it. In my relative's case, save up the money and then put it in the pool. Oh, but I want it now. I want it now. I want to enjoy it now. Well, that's a problem with most of our society. You want everything now instead of having delayed satisfaction. It's kind of out of favor these days. We do have time for another couple of questions. The lines are open. You can call right now. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and you can reach me at 888-99-CHART. I'll do my best to answer any financial question here on InvestTalk.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And we can get caught up in the news of the day, like today, and we don't even notice that there's work to do right here at home. To manage our finances, we have to have a solid foundation. And if you have questions about assessing your current portfolio, don't hesitate to ask. 888-99-CHART is our anytime line, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Or you can send a note. Click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to our friend Cherie in Fremont. How are you doing, Cherie?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you, Steve?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Okay. Hey, I'm kind of intrigued by market behavior today. I mean, it went down 220 points and then goes up 97. So I was wondering, what is your take on this?
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that this would be what's called a reversal day. A reversal day in which, you know, very early on, no one had faith in the market and it just fell like a stone for a little bit. And then everybody came back in. So probably this tells me that the market really doesn't want to go down. I mean, it would be nice to see what happens in the next few days if the market's going to start bouncing again. And because, you know, Cherie, we're stuck in this channel, right? We're just stuck from the beginning of the year to now. Mm-hmm. and it's still stuck, but this kind of day is called a reversal day. And if you look back in October when the market went down almost 10%, it also had two or three reversal days in a row and then just came roaring back till the end of the year. And this is
Is this the time now to get back in?
Well, I don't know if you got out, but I would wait till tomorrow. If you see the market doing the same kind of action or moving up tomorrow, I put some money into the market. I would, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the market, but I have some cash, so I was wondering, is it time to, go back in?
Well, it certainly hasn't been much of a correction. I mean, we're talking, what, 2%? I mean, nothing, really.
I know, yeah.
But
that the correction, I think, has been very elusive.
It has been very elusive. So, but, yeah. This kind of reversal day gives you a little bit of confidence. Let's put it that way. So I still think it's early, and I think I'd wait another day or two to see. I do think it's called a reversal day. It's just not a huge reversal day. It's a pretty decent reversal day. The problem I see, Cherie, is that the volume was not that much. Go compare it with the reversal days in October when the market's bottomed. Uh-huh. The volume was twice as much. So without that volume, I'm not all that confident in it. Okay?
Okay. All right, Steve.
Thanks,
Cherie. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Because in a huge volume, there's a lot of people sold off and a lot of people came back in. Well, this was a decent volume day, but not only half of what it was back in October when we had a 10% correction, 9.9% or something like that for the S&P 500. Some interesting stats, economic stats. Did you see that the first time since 1990, we had a trade surplus with our biggest trading partner, Canada? First time. Remember, this comes out every month. So the first time since 1990, we had a trade surplus with Canada. Now, who knows if this is just a one-month aberration? I don't know. But it was interesting. There was a sharp home price increase reported this week. Job openings in May, now I know that's a long time ago, were the highest since 2000. But at the same time, workers that were quitting, the number of workers that quit, fell very sharply. Now, what does that mean? Usually when the job market is very strong, workers will quit and go find another good job, a better job. If the job market is strong, workers are confident, they leave, they quit and go get another job because it's available. And they can do, increase their salaries, if they do better benefits, whatever, for whatever reason. That number shrank sharply, even with the highest job opening since 2000. Something's not right there. Those two stats don't match up. Isn't that kind of interesting? I thought it was interesting, and I think it's indicative of the employment picture here in the United States. It is really still looking not very good. Even though we're producing jobs, there's still a lot of issues that are out there that make the employment job. I mean, for instance, another statistic that's very odd is that our unemployment rate fell 0.2%. We're down to 5.5%. I don't know, whatever it is, right? At the same time, our labor participation rate for the working age group is at its lowest ever since they've been keeping count. Why? If the jobs are growing, wouldn't the labor participation rate increase with more people coming in? That doesn't match up either. Something's odd. And we're out of time for today. If you have more questions about the Greek financial crisis, use our 24-hour listen line. Get your question in to me anytime you want. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, I want to thank you for listening today. I hope you enjoy your evening, and then again, you want to be here tomorrow. Join me again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.